To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
All right, everyone, we're live again. The Viking is here.
I am.
Yes. Queen Abs.
Oh my God.
You Abby. She's here with us, and she's going to talk today, guys.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit.
And our friend of the tentacled variety, Justin, is here. Hello. I'm your host, Brian. We also have an audience member today, which is a first.
Ooh. Yay.
If you hear some applause from the back, that's our audience.
Praise job.
So I am really excited about this. For one, we haven't been together for a while, so I've had a lot that I've been thinking about. I actually did a stand-up routine, and I wrote a joke in there, and then I had an entire podcast based off of that joke, and we will do that one, but we can't do that tonight because Queen Abs wanted to do a holiday episode.
I'm gonna blush every time you say that. Don't
it's
don't
so fantastic. This is so great. This is the best nickname I've ever given.
It is about the perfect time for it because we're what, 4 days away?
Yeah, we're right there. We're on the verge of Christmas. So
on the verge.
Now another reason I'm really excited about tonight is that I was in Ohio with some friends. And we went to a giant Kroger liquor store. I guess it's the second largest Kroger in the U.S. And I found this Middle West Spirits Straight Rye Whiskey Dark Pumpernickel. And hanging below this were a bunch of awards. It has two gold medals and a silver medal. Well, Middle West Spirits is really interesting because they're making a straight rye whiskey. Notice not a bourbon, just a straight rye whiskey. And they're making it out of Ohio. Columbus, Ohio is where this place is located. It's Buckeye Rye. They make a vodka, they make a honey vanilla bean vodka, a bourbon barrel finished honey vanilla bean vodka. They're big on the vodkas. Stone fruit vodka. They make a straight whiskey that's called a wheat whiskey. That one was there as well. They make a bourbon called Michelin Reserve, which is also getting some big marks, but it's also about $90 a bottle.
Oh, shit.
I looked that one up. So, yeah, we won't have that one more likely. But
we might pitch in on it sometime.
Maybe.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Upper shelf.
Yeah. They have a rye white whiskey, which is 100 proof. I've not seen that one.
No, we've never done a white rye, have we?
Yeah, the only one I've had is that Jim Tom's rye moonshine. It's technically would be, I think, a white rye. Oloroso wheat whiskey. Oloroso wheat whiskey double cast. And this was one that I was reading about just a minute ago. Sherry finished bourbon, double cask.
Oh,
very interesting. Yeah, they also make a gin and a barrel-aged maple syrup. So there's a little bar there. I looked the place up. Looks really interesting. I can't find out when they started, but they're not that old. They've not been around a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. So really cool. Dark Pumpernickel. And the reviews I'm seeing on this...
It's like it's maple syrup dark.
They're very interesting. Yeah. This one guy did not like rye and said this is better than a rye, even though it is a rye. So apparently they've done something right.
I love rye.
it was Ella's absolute favorite. So I have had many a rye. And
it's like much lighter on the pour. Once it hits the glass, it lightens up quite a bit.
And the ice cube helps there.
Yeah, there's no water in that glass. So.
Here, baby.
All right, everyone. Let's cheers it.
And a new one. All right, cheers.
Ooh, praise God, that's spicy.
That'll tickle your nose hairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is
real good, though.
It is completely different from your standard.
I think
that'll
make your babies born naked.
Probably screaming too.
I've never had a rye this smooth.
It is very smooth.
It is smooth.
All the punch is at the beginning.
Yep.
It doesn't have the dragon breath at the
end.
No. It'll just curl your nose hairs. That's about it. And then it's all gone. It's got a real
long
sweet,
finish.
Smooth finish. Yeah.
Yep.
Praise God in heaven.
I'm tasting almost like a cherry type flavor.
Yeah, almost like you were talking about one of them was a sherry finish.
Yeah.
That reminds me of is like a cream sherry.
Yeah.
On the finish.
That's what I'm tasting.
I have to say, guys, for what I paid for this is fantastic.
Yeah. This is this a mid-shelf?
Yeah. And it's a contender.
30s-ish.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
This is wonderful. Well, that's a new one. We're going to have to... Kentucky, you have some competition.
Yeah.
From Ohio.
the audience agrees.
Yeah.
Yes, audience is cheering. Yay! Hooray!
Yeah, you do this.
So, you've heard us bring this up a couple times in the past. We talk about how the holidays we celebrate have a lot of heritage that is not based in what we perceive them as. You know, that Jesus is the reason for the season. That's not true.
Not even remotely.
That's not where it started. There's so many other religions.
Yes.
It was actually decided. I'm not sure. I just tried to Google it, actually. But it was decided by a pope to change Jesus's birthday, quote-unquote, to the winter solstice.
He was born sometime in spring,
It was to make it to appease most of the Northern Europeans, because Northern Europeans
were
very reluctant to switch over to Christianity. They didn't want to. Right. Yeah. They were kind of forced into it.
So they just had to rename some holidays for
them. Yeah. I believe originally Jesus's birthday was in June.
He was a summer baby, for sure. All the articles I've read
said, of the census and stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, for one, he was laid down with the lamb. Lambs would not have been little lambs
in December.
In December. That's slaughter time.
Yeah, you're not having...
That's slaughter time, fellas.
Winter babies there. Yeah. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And really, our ideas on Christmas now stem from the 19th century. I mean, how we view Christmas today has only been around for 200 years at best.
And nobody ever talks about the darker side of the holiday.
Yeah.
Like,
the many
Krampus.
Darker sides.
Yeah. Krampus is big in European countries still.
Yeah.
I think that even came from the Northern Germanic religions, my religions too. Santa Claus was originally, the original, where that came from was in my religion. It says that was one of the times where Odin would come down. He is the All-Father. That's why originally he was called Father Christmas. He would come down, and one of the biggest things in my religion is hospitality. You are not supposed to ever turn anybody away from your door. Especially that time of year. And he would come down and visit houses, and where he got good hospitality, he would be generous back to them. It wasn't everybody. Not everybody got presents or anything like that. But the ones that weren't got equally punished. Well, after they got Christianized, it became from the All-Father visiting them to Father Christmas. That's why he's a big white guy with a huge white beard.
Yeah,
getting flying through the sky because Odin rides a flying horse called Sleipnir, and so that's why he's flying through the air. And it went from Father Christmas to, and then it got conglomerated with a saint, the Saint Nicholas.
Yep,
and it kind of got merged into the modern day Santa Claus.
There's a lot of things that influenced the Santa Claus myth.
Yes.
One of the there's a lot of strong evidence points to the Sami people. The Sami people of the northern steppes in Eastern Europe, they're reindeer herders.
Yeah.
And they think this is how reindeers and stockings got added to the whole mythos, is the shaman at the end of fall, everyone would gather, they'd hunt and gather, and he would, by a sleigh that was pulled by a reindeer in a red fur coat, literally, travel to all the households on the solstice. And he would wrap dried berries and dried meat. Another thing is Amanita muscaria mushrooms, which are the classic red and white polka-dotted mushroom from Mario Brothers that make you trip balls when taken correctly. So visions of
sugar plums dancing in their head.
And he was literally, because all these things needed to be dried, he would wrap them in a... they believe they used, and currently that they use the gut skin, or the gut of, and like you would do a sausage, to wrap it in and hang it over their fire pit inside their hut. And so they would wake with all these gifts. They would get to eat, have a feast the next morning with their family, and they'd get a trip balls.
Yeah.
And it's not too far flung to think that you would see the shaman flying away on his reindeer sled. On his reindeer. Yeah, and literally, the shaman, how they marked the shaman was with red. Like, his coat would have patches dyed red. Mm-hmm. He would have a sleigh that would be dyed red, if possible. So there's a lot of influence. And it's kind of crazy how the modern day has been created literally... Every culture in the world has contributed essentially in some way to how we live
today. To the current religion that most of this country, anyway, most of this country celebrates. Because
they've pulled and stole and conquered their way across the globe. So there's pieces that come from places you would never think to look.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. One of the things I've been reading about, which is so weird, the modern way Christianity is done in Europe is still very different of Christmas than how we do in the U.S. They celebrate essentially from December 5th or December 6th, depending on the country.
It's the 13 days of Yule.
Yeah. All the way through the 26th, actually, because they have Boxing Day as well. Yeah. And it's very much more about the religion in most of those countries as well. Now, you get into, like, Lisbon or London, it's all about gift-giving, just like it is here.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting to see just the subtle differences. Like, you look at, I was just reading about the Dutch Santa Claus. His horse is pulled by, or his sleigh is pulled by a horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has either one or many underlings called Black Thomas, I believe is the name.
Black Thomas.
And he's literally covered in soot. That's why they call him Black Thomas, because he's who goes down your chimney. And that one comes straight from the Vikings.
Yeah.
You know it does. I mean, it is exactly like Odin with his servants coming down and like...
Yep.
It's kind of interesting to see the amalgamation once you start breaking it down.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at our timeline for actually how we chose... the 23rd of December in this. It starts with the Greeks, and Chronia is the name of it. Chronia directly becomes Saturnalia. Saturnalia was the 17th of December, and then Saturnalia gets extended from the 17th of December to the 23rd.
Really?
And this is interesting. When they would celebrate Saturnalia, it would overturn social norms, and slaves and freedmen were equal.
Well.
And there were gift exchanges, but they were mostly gag gifts. They would elect the king of Saturnalia.
Yeah.
Lord of Misrule. I was just talking about that.
And so that's where we get our time.
I've read all kinds of stories about the Lord of Misrule, and man, that's just... I don't think I'd want to do that.
Yeah.
It's not always good to be the king.
Yeah. No, because they take a person of lower social and economic standing, and they bring them into their home, and then so everybody there is like, you know, more upper echelon than this person, and they make fun of him all night, but he gets to do whatever he wants. Yeah. So, you know, maybe he's not so hurt about
and
it.
And in some cultures, they'd be sacrificed at the end of the night.
Right. Yes, and
exactly. But then you got to look at the transverse side of that too, because he gets brought in and treated like crap. Like royal crap, but crap, because everybody's looking down and making fun of this little peasant. Look what he's doing.
Yeah.
But you know, every other person that didn't get chosen.
Oh, yeah. They're so jealous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to do that.
So he's got like the worst of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets fat and happy for one night, but I bet that it did not end well.
Yeah.
Well, I bet he was just drunk and, whatever.
The Lord of Misrule
drunk as a lord.
To have come from the election of the king of Saturnalia. The king of Saturnalia actually would dictate how the festivities went. The Lord of Misrule is almost a perversion of that. If that makes sense. At some point it comes along. So it's a really interesting thing. We basically, we're almost to the day celebrating Saturnalia and calling it Christmas. But, you know, we got to work up until that day. You can't take off the 17th to the
1st. Yeah, the 23rd is the last day I have to work.
Yeah, same here.
So,
when's that?
Thursday.
It's Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah.
I get Thursday off, luckily.
Oh, lucky.
We're all in. Now you are the king of misrule.
I get to dictate how it goes. Naps all around.
Yep.
So. Naps and debauchery.
Praise God.
So for anybody that doesn't know what Saturnalia is, what it's a Roman Roman celebrated holiday. Yes, yeah. It was Roman.
It was their transition from winter back to the summertime. Yeah, the
winter solstice, shortest day of the year.
Yep. Same way with Yule. In Yule, they had the 13 days, and you would celebrate a different. There's the 13 key points. And each day you would honor one of them all the way down through, and you would have a Yule log placed at the center of a small altar, usually, and give small gifts each day. Mm-hmm. And the culmination of it at the very end of the 13th day was the day of the first day of winter, mm-hmm. which is the last day of the shortening of the days. Mm-hmm. And they would usually burn the Yule log and then leap across it at midnight to symbolize going into the new year.
Yeah, celebration days
become. Yeah, we go over the fire.
Seems much more thorough than what we do now.
Well, I've been doing this since I was 12. This is my religion. I've done a ton of research on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a little bit about a lot of religions. Mm-hmm. Justin's way more well-read on a lot of the other ones. But when it comes to Azatru, you'll find few people that know more about it than I do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Queen Abs, what do you got for us?
So here? She's got the notebook guys. So so other cultures, how they celebrate the winter solstice, like in feudal Japan, there was Amaterasu. And
don't you call me that.
She lived in a cave, and the other gods would make all this noise and wake her up on the winter solstice.
Isn't she a moon goddess?
Do what?
Isn't she a moon goddess?
No, this one, this one isn't the moon goddess. That's a different one. It sounds a lot like that though, I think. Yeah. But she would have to see her image in a mirror, and then she would come out and bring the sun, she had to restore the sun to the universe for everybody.
Yeah. She was a bit vain.
Yeah, just a bit. She needed to see herself before she could turn that light on, I feel that. So, and then, I mean, I don't know. You guys, I'm not good at this. Well,
you're doing fine.
The Buddhist.
That's something I didn't know about.
Yeah, it was.
You're definitely doing great.
I don't know. And then on the other side of Odin, the goddess Kione.
Uh-huh.
Kione, who gives birth to the sun. I love her. Yeah. I want to give birth to... I have two sons, but...
But then none of them glowed when they came out.
Yeah. And all that is hidden will emerge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
So Buddhists have another December located holiday, which is actually December 8th. That's a Bodhi day. Mm-hmm. I may be saying that wrong. But that's when Buddha achieved enlightenment under the Bodhi tree.
Yeah.
So that's also, it's early in December.
That is a very complex myth. It involves a cobra shilling him. And it's actually a very beautiful story, though.
Yes.
When I was a pretentious 13-year-old, I believed myself to be Buddhist for a month or so.
I was going to say, hot minute.
Went through every kind of...
What ended it, actually, Clint was there, and this is actually how I realized Clint was going to be a lifelong friend. I believe I was 14, and the Pharaoh Small, when it was still alive and breathing, and I was doing a fast to try to reach enlightenment, and I hadn't eaten in all day since I had woken up, and I was all excited because Clint and I were going to go up to Columbus with our other buddy Matt, and we were going to hang out at Pharaoh Small and try to meet girls, and we're walking around Pharaoh Small all excited, buying pants. I bought... helped Clint pick out his first pair of baggy draws.
Yeah. My first baggy draws at 14.
Yeah, we were all excited. Matt meets a couple of girls and brings them over. They're talking to us, and I start feeling horribly nauseous. And I feel almost feverish, like I can't control my body temperature. And I'm getting tunnel vision really bad, and I've never felt like this in my entire life. And I just felt like I needed to sit down, and I leaned against the wall and just passed out, like completely unconscious. And the last thing I remember was hearing Matt go, "You got him, right? I'm going to leave with these girls." And Clint picked me up, woke me up, and bought me a Euro from the Euro place in Fredericks Mall and saved my life. My blood sugar had bottomed out. I was diabetic. Yeah. And that
didn't know it
ended
at the time. Yeah.
That actually, I asked you.
And that
I remember asking you what was wrong because you were just, we went from talking just like we're doing now, you know, especially at 14. We're just jabber, jabber, jabber. And then he just got quiet for a minute, and I kind of turned and looked at him, and his eyes are like half rolled in his head like he was trying to stay awake. And I was like, "Man, you all right?" And he goes, I just feel weird. And I went to, I think I told you to sit down or something like that, and you didn't quite make it, and we got you down.
Yeah.
But then you just kind of slumped, and Matt was like, "You got that? Peace."
Yeah. He was out.
That's a major party.
He was
chasing
the
tail.
Yeah. And I finally got it out of you that you hadn't ate anything. And I was like, "Well, shit, man, I'll buy you a sandwich." At the time, I didn't think it was anything like diabetic or something. I just thought you just hadn't had a chance to eat.
Yeah.
Like, shit, I'll buy a man a sandwich.
You're starving.
I aimed for enlightenment. And all I got was my very best friend. So.
Maybe 25 years now. So
maybe
he's the Buddha. The Viking King is the Buddha. There's a crossover going on here.
Okay, guys.
I do look
feel
vaguely
like
Jesus.
I feel like we can't talk about like the changing of the seasons without mentioning Demeter. Everybody knows who she is, right? Mm. Persephone's mother.
Yeah.
Persephone, you know, she goes down to, has to be with Hades for 6 months Queen out of the year.
Yeah.
Demeter is so grief-stricken that everything dies for 6 months, and that's essentially how we get fall and winter.
Yep.
So,
beautiful.
Here's to Demeter.
Cheers.
She's one of my favorites.
Me as well. Her and Hecate.
Over some dude. Yeah. All over some dude.
Yep, right. Over some dude. Well,
Hades,
I mean.
How dramatic are you?
This is a very
I
random.
I kill all the plants in the world.
All of them.
Pines, because I like the way they
grow. They get seasonal. When I get seasonal depression, everything dies.
So there. This is a random metal reference. There's a band called Ginger, spelled with a J. J-I-N-J-E-R. And
they are brutal.
Yes, it's a female vocalist from right there by Russia. Mm-hmm. Hang on here.
Yeah.
Not the Ukraine.
Ukraine. She's from the Ukraine. Okay. Yes, and there's a song called Perennial, which is about this, about dying off and coming back the next year. Fantastic song. Really, really cool band. I've seen them live a couple times.
They're intense.
Yes, a fantastic live. This is very weird, but the Russians and Russian Orthodoxy. I always look this up because Russians have their own Christianity.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's I don't know what it's drawn from, but they celebrate Christmas on January 7th.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve is January 6th, and Christmas is January 7th.
We passed out through the last part of December.
Yeah.
I just read an interesting book. I just tried to Google it, and I just can't remember the name. It was a couple months ago. I read an interesting book that took place in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And a large part of it was a Christian sect of Russia that has been banned in Russia since the 1890s because how they celebrated was they were very pious in life. They would self-flagellate, like harden themselves in public. They had to live poorly, like money was a sin. But then they would get together and have orgies behind closed doors and do a bunch of drugs.
Okay.
Opium, alcohol, and orgies.
What religion is this?
It was a Russian sect of Christianity. Huh. Praise God.
Yes, praise God.
Doc, comrade.
here's another
praise
random.
Jazad.
Jazad.
Random metal reference. The music video for the Rammstein song Rosenrot. Is a group of monks that self-flagellate.
Yeah.
He gets in trouble for coming onto a girl. And
yeah.
That's not uncommon with monks, the self-flagellation.
It's a very weird thing, but that's the world over.
Yeah.
All throughout.
The Muslims do it. There's a sect of them that do it, and they're brutal about it.
There's
cut themselves open.
The Jains, which are their own religion. But
well, wasn't it the Dalai Lama that would, like, quote unquote, air quotes you guys can't see, like test his
fortitude?
Yeah, fortitude. He would lock himself into like these rooms with naked girls.
I don't know if that was
it was one of the Big Saint Men. What was the other one? I'm pretty sure it was the Dalai Lama, though.
It may have been.
Hmm.
The Dalai Lama has evolved with each Dalai Lama that is born. Because we're up to, like, I think the current Dalai Lama, we're into the 90s.
Right, yeah.
I believe.
He's reborn.
He's brilliant. He really is.
The current one.
The current one. Yeah. He has said many times, I'm not a god, I am not a religion, I am a man, and I am fallible.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, correct me. My religion is love. And he said that many times. I actually got to see him. But I can't think of exactly what you're talking. It makes sense, though. I could very much see the testing.
The test is like willpower.
Yeah, humans love to test their faith. And sometimes in some crazy ways. I mean, you've got the Buddhist monks that were protesting the war in Vietnam, setting themselves on fire public.
Yep.
And you watch that video. It's tough. And it's actually the album cover of the first Rage.
Gandhi. I apologize. It was Gandhi.
Okay.
Corrected.
Gandhi was a special kind of guy.
He claimed to be a virgin until death and pure. But he would regularly lock himself. Nobody was allowed to disturb. Locked from the inside himself into a room with a bed and a bunch of naked girls.
And they weren't
allowed to test his fortitude or whatever.
And they were supposed to ignore the sounds.
Right. <yeah. laughs>
Those
that was him praying that's loudly.
Prayer. That's prayer.
Oh, God.
Oh, goodness.
Listen how pious he is.
Yeah.
So many prayers.
Tempt me harder, John.
Now I'm concerned. Were these young ladies willing?
I hope.
Yeah.
Who knows?
He was like a celebrity at the time when
he was.
He
was kind of like Elvis rolling up. So
I would imagine to be someone who was beautiful enough to be a temptation to him was probably just fine. And they all probably thought that I'm the one that broke his spirit.
He was a chubby chaser.
That's probably what it was. That was more acceptable.
Guys that like to starve themselves love fat women.
True. Wow.
It's a fetish thing.
It is a fetish thing. I've seen it in life. Concerning.
It does seem to be the way. When you see a dude that's like 6 foot tall and 120 pounds, they're with some chick that is 5 foot two, 300.
No doubt.
We're not making fun of anyone.
It's just an observation.
More power to us.
Observation.
Did it?
Yeah. There's nothing.
I can't say you're wrong though.
I've seen skinny people get together. There's a guy I work with, young guy, great dude, but probably 5'10", 110 pounds.
Yeah.
And I finally seen his girlfriend. We had our Christmas dinner the other day. Girlfriend, fiance, wife, whatever she is. I'm not 100% sure. And she is like a miniature version of him. I'm like, oh my God. It's like when they have sex, it's got to sound like a bag of sticks getting rattled.
That's funny that you say that. Clint and I have a mutual ex-friend. Starts with a D. He's a hot mess of a human being, and he is he's happy when he's 120 pounds. He's 6'1", 6'2"?
Nah, he's not. Maybe 6'1", maybe 6'1". Probably more like 6. Yeah.
You can see his ribs.
Oh yeah. And like a xylophone.
He likes women that are usually on meth or pills or both. That you can see their ribs as well. And there was one girl he brought to my house, and I looked right at him and her, and I said, does it, like, start a fire when you guys have sex? And I was like, what? I was like, it's two sticks rubbing together, bro.
What the hell? What is an old-time redneck? Is it like a washboard they play?
Yeah.
It sounds like a washboard.
Oh, my God.
Instead of ring here.
He's got sound effects and everything.
I wonder what he's doing this Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, probably meth.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Holiday meth. Dye green and red.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Yeah.
Well, all that being said, about it's not the modern day Christian's fault.
No,
it's not.
That
no,
all
not
these things got conglomerated from two or three other major religions at the time. And I have to say that one of the few things that I miss about, like, most of my family, extended family, are Christian. And everybody in this room is the same way. I do miss the getting together for major holidays and getting a group of people.
Well, now, that's what it's all about. We miss that. They've taken away what it really means. Like, the meaning of the season is to come together. All of the holidays
used to do the same.
Celebrate. I mean,
whole communities would come together. It's all about,
what are you going to give me? What can I give you? Like, I don't know. What am I going to get?
I miss that when we were kids. I miss the big Thanksgivings. I miss the big Christmas get-togethers.
This is something I wanted to bring up.
Past that point so far.
It seems like
this is one of the things I wanted to bring up was I think every family kind of had their own quirks and traditions around Christmas.
Absolutely.
I'd like to talk about some of your guys's. Did your family do anything that you don't feel like other families really did?
I mean, my family did all kinds of things other families didn't do, but I've been as a true since I was 12. Yeah. So, I mean, we celebrate each one of the solstice and equinoxes and stuff, and the Yule or winter solstice was always a great big one in our family. Yeah. That's when my uncle and his wife and stepdaughter, but he raised her from a baby, so it was just his girl.
Yeah.
They were always there celebrating with us, and me and my dad, we were all there, and then a handful of, like, surrounding people would join, and we'd have up to 10 or 12 people, and those were always fantastic times. We'd have big meals, and always a big bonfire. That's a very important thing in almost all winter solstice religions, is a big bonfire.
Yeah.
And I miss that more than anything, is getting the big group of people around the big bonfire and just sitting and bullshitting.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we do, but it's on a smaller scale. My uncle died.
Yeah.
My uncle's wife doesn't have anything to do with it anymore. The daughter that he raised is pretty much off doing her own thing. It's just me and my dad. No. My mom joins us now. She's actually kind of mad at me that I didn't tell her about my religion for 30 years. But she was always very staunchly Christian, and I was always very respectful of that and would never bring it up around her. And I finally told her here just a handful of years ago, and she just instantly was like, I have had misgivings about Christianity all my life. I can't believe you took this long to tell me about it. So my mom joins in. Of course, my wife does. And my boys will when they get up to that age. Right now, they're too little.
Yeah, that's the great thing. You'll pass those traditions down.
Right.
And keep them alive.
Yeah. Mostly... Growing up, I got to join in the non-Christian big stuff. Like 4th of July was always a huge thing when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
I had an uncle that drove a truck, and he would drive, at that time of year, a bunch of the fireworks back and forth. And he would always get given a box. Every time he would drop something off, they would say, if you want some of these, have some of them. And he would end up showing up with a truck bed. I mean, a literal full-size truck bed full of boxes of fireworks.
That's amazing.
Wow. Oh, my God. You talk about having a pig and shit. You talk about a six-year-old set free with a shipping crate of fireworks on a farm. I could go anywhere and blow anything up. Oh, my God. It was great.
That reminds me of our 4th of July. We had probably 6 or 7 years ago. All I remember is there were whiskey, guns, and lots of fireworks involved.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. We just spent the whole day
throwing whiskey, guns, and fireworks.
We were like 12-year-old boys for an entire day. It was amazing. We just ran around shooting fireworks out of the sky. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
It was a beautiful holiday.
So I do have something really interesting about this. My family had some traditions. The one that I despised the most was every Thanksgiving or any get together we had, they would watch football and just holler. Hated it. It drove me nuts. But this is something that I've caught on to, that my passion was food. I'll never forget CJ when he was referencing me. He said he's a foodie, and I was like, what do you mean by that? But I meant that I pay attention to how people eat, what's going on, what goes into stuff. Well, Ella's family's huge. They're enormous. They have to rent out the Vernon Gym to have their Christmases.
They're enormous as a group, not individually as a person.
There may be a few.
Oh, it's so big. But the way you said, I just wanted to clarify.
Why did you go there, Clint? Well,
the way you skinny. The way he said it, I wanted to make sure that was clarified. Okay. We did just talk about it.
I was just like, wait a minute, because that didn't cross my mind, but okay.
So what we would go, and every year I would get this persimmon pudding, and it was dark, so it was made with local persimmons. Ella was like, ew, we hate that. We thought it was brownies when we were younger. And I was like, you come on now. Like, yeah. This is amazing. Yeah. So one year it wasn't there. And I said, hey, which one of your aunts makes the persimmon pudding? And she went around and asked because she wasn't really sure. Because this is just a giant pigeon. I mean, there's a table absolutely full of food and desserts. And we found out that it was her grandma. Who was in her, I think she was in her 90s, that was making it.
Oh, and you got to save that recipe.
We didn't get the recipe, but I have a triumph story. I went through a ton of different recipes, and I kind of could tell what was going on with it, and I do have a recipe now. I've never made it with local persimmons. I need to. Yeah. I've made it with Fuyas.
So
I'm going to need some pulp. I made it this year with Fuyas
again.
They're
gone now, but we can get them next year.
Yes, next year. And I need I absolutely need some pawpaws next year.
I have pawpaws too. Yeah,
I have access to them as well.
So we got it. Ella and I tried two different ones, and on the second one, I thought I had it. I was like, hey, this older recipes were a lot different. They used a lot more spice and a lot less sugar. And I can recreate it. And I really hope that I can do it with that. Now, the other one is, this was just happened to me. We have Christmas coming up on Christmas Day with Ella's family. And my nephew, over the phone, he's a little bit, he's like 7. He says he wants Ella's meatballs or Ella's, the weenies she made. And this, I didn't even think about it, but that is a recipe that she would sit here and make that in her deviled eggs that she made up. And that we never shared. So I was like, thank God I know how to make that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make that for him. So that's another thing that dies off, guys. You need to do this. When you're around your family this year, pay attention to the older people that are cooking. I mean, even if they're in their 50s, because you never really know.
And ask them.
Yes, I'm the one that cooks.
Get it wrote down.
Yeah. That's what I was getting ready to say. Even if it's yours. Yeah. If it's something that everybody likes, write it down.
Write it down and pass it along. Because
you never know when somebody's going to miss that.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, nothing's that big of a secret that you need to hide it. It's food. Right. Let people enjoy it.
I can tell you, as someone who has moved away from home, I think most people have moved a distance from home. Sometimes tasting that food can bring you back home for a minute. It can make, like, even in your darkest, I'm homesick, I'm ready to just give up and go back, and you can taste that. For me, one of them was broccoli rice casserole my grandmother made.
Yep.
Absolutely loved it. I didn't even care for broccoli as a kid, but in broccoli rice casserole, it was heaven to me. And I figured out how to make it. And the biggest compliment, my mom did not give compliments. And one of the biggest compliments she gave me right before she passed was, she was like, you took grandma's recipe, perfected it, and made it better. So all I did was
a good compliment.
Yeah. All I did was add bacon.
Bacon makes everything better, though.
But just tasting that, I would occasionally, when I moved to Louisville, I would just make it on a day.
Love it.
Mine is my mom's oyster dressing.
Oh, I love oyster dressing
from scratch. And you guys are right, and thank you for reminding me. I need to get her to write that down.
Write it down. Yes. Write it down. Because I've had to do this with the white chili recipe. Fortunately, that was actually my recipe that we had came up with together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously I'd been pretty traumatized, so it took me a while to remember it. And I was like, no, it's this. I remember how he did that.
Yeah.
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 But it's a big thing that, like, I've got access to it, and she's actually offered to give it to me, but I want her to hold on to it till then. Yeah. But I've got my grandmother's recipe book.
Yeah,
she wrote everything down in.
That's a blessing.
And it wasn't uncommon in our grandparents' day to write all this stuff down and pass it down from family member to family member. It's only been within our parents' age.
Yeah, right. That it's become uncommon.
It's like we've gotten too busy to worry about it.
Yeah.
And that's so sad.
We're too stressed, too busy.
Most people don't even cook anymore.
Yeah, I know. I know they do.
And
I know.
It's because they stay busy. They don't have. I don't have time on an everyday dip set down and have a meal.
I do, and that's my problem. Yeah, you know, when we're trying to come up with times to this podcast. Yeah. You know, I've got a family. My elderly mother, who's disabled, lives with us, and she's a freaking godsend that she did move in with us to help take care of the babies. Because me and my wife both work. I work first shift. She's currently working second shift. But when I get home after a 9.5, 10-hour shift and 2 hours of driving each way, I've got to cook supper for everybody. I've got all kinds of boys that's got to eat. I've got a wife that won't have time when she gets home.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to get there. You know, and I've got a toddler that as soon as he sees me, he comes screaming and running up to me. He wants to be up my butt all the time. So I'm his favorite person in the world. And I just, you never have enough time, and I got to get that. And I understand that, but you got to make time because eventually you're not going to be here.
Yeah.
And those people that love you right now that are still here when you're gone,
that's what they're
going to remember. They want part of that.
Yeah. That's what they're going to remember.
Yes, they do.
It doesn't have to be food.
Yeah.
Right, you know.
Anything down.
Pass stuff down. Put stuff down that people will remember you for, that you love to do, that they love to do with you.
Sorry, go ahead. One of the things that I've noticed, even now, I mean, in the last decade, I've dated and befriended people from the deep, deep South.
Yeah.
And it is still, it's almost religious to pass down the family recipe.
Yep. It's like a Bible.
It looks like a leather-bound Bible.
It does.
It's crazy. When I dated I've mentioned her on the podcast before, the girl from New Orleans, just outside of New Orleans in the country, her family, I mean, it was this thick.
Yeah.
This is a 5-inch thick book that was leather-bound with handwritten recipes going back almost 200 years. And I think that's beautiful to be able to hold something that your ancestors. I just saw one of those silly reels on Facebook where this guy broke down the math. He said, for you to be here today, it took 2 parents, 4 grandparents, 8 great-great-parents, great-grandparents, 16 great-great, 32 great-great-great, 64. He went all the way back 9 generations, which is, I think, 400 years. It was the number, and he was up to like 16,000 people for you to exist today.
We're such beautiful accidents.
We really are.
What if your great great grandma wasn't in the move that night?
Exactly,
you wouldn't be here.
Exactly,
you would not be here.
Separate beds, like that much.
But this is what he said. This is what he said at the end of it. He said, "Think of all the life that happened in that time." With these 1,600 people, all the fears, all the anxiety, all the love, all the relationships, the love stories, the wars, the fights, the arguments, the injuries. He's like, think about that. Put that in perspective inside your head. Think about they lived a life and now you're here.
Yeah.
And it's a happy accident.
Yeah.
And I think but it's the also holidays,
a lot of work and a lot of loving work.
I think the holidays are a time to celebrate.
That's exactly what they're supposed to be. Yes.
To celebrate this amalgamation. One of my favorite moments with my grandpa, and it's so silly because I doubt he even remembered it. For his 91st birthday, all the family had come out of the woodworks. His great-great-grandchildren were there. He had like 7 at that point. great-great-grandchildren. And we're some baby makers on that side of the family. one of my cousins looked at him. One of my adult cousins looked at him and said, Coleman, look at what you did. Looking around the room. Every one of those people in that room, except for spouses, could trace their lineage back to this one man. There was like 125 people.
It's amazing.
It's mind-blowing to think about. It put it in perspective for me. And he's like, I think I did all right.
Time travelers, man. That's how we travel through time.
That's fantastic.
You pass it on. We can't do it personally, but you give it to the next.
But as crazy as it is, I personally was thinking about this the other day. Our technology has become so much more advanced, even when we were in high school, on back 50, 100 years.
Nostalgia generation, yeah.
Yes. But they kept better records, I believe, back then than we do now today.
Yep.
They took more pride in their heritage than we do today.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
And what does that say about us as a society?
Well, the reason why we don't take personal records anymore is because we no longer have to. There's better government records now, which sucks because the more important ones are those personal stories.
Right.
Like, keep journals, because your kids are going to want to know your inner thoughts one day. It's kind of amazing. Abby's dad, he's a 70 or 71. He has been journaling every day since his mid-20s, I think.
Wow.
He literally has thousands of notebooks.
That would be amazing.
And he journals everything that happens. Yeah. Everything in his life that happens. Even if it's just, Fred stopped by today, he journals it. Yeah, and one day, he won't let her touch him now, but he said, the day I die, you can pick him up and open him up and
go through
read him.
So and what do you do to stop her?
I think that's his thinking is I can stop you now. I'll be able to once I'm gone.
Yeah.
But I think that's I think it would be neat to be able to see some of your ancestors' knowledge, thoughts.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Just bits and pieces, I've heard.
In this home, in this house, I was given these after my grandmother passed away at 102 and 9 months.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. We got some good genes. There are pictures that my grandfather took. He was an MP, and he was on the Eastern Front.
Oh, man.
And I've looked through these, and I was blown completely away. He would take pictures of these. He had a camera. He rode a motorcycle. He was an MP, but that's what they used. And he was big into photography. He had a camera, so he took pictures of these cities that were destroyed out and burned out, and people walking and stuff. And he would pick up the pamphlets of, like, the Nazi party's here to save, but it's all in German. You know, you look up the translations. And I have to get those scanned in at some point.
That's amazing. Yep.
Yes.
That's
it's awesome. It was the most shocking thing that I was given.
To have
my aunt just walked up to me after my grandma died and was like, hey, we've got these. And I always knew. I didn't know my grandfather. Grandpa died when I was like 2.5 months old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I didn't really know him.
Yeah.
But I knew the stories. And I knew there were Masonic plates and stuff.
Yeah.
That meant stuff hanging in our kitchen. He was a Mason, I found out later. That the lineage, the line died with him, though, because he offered it to my father, who did not take it. Yes, so...
Is that what kind of drove you to take that step?
That's what drove me to ask about it, yeah. Just the history. And he was an interesting character. I mean, just seeing that stuff was so wild. I was like, for one, Dad always told me Grandpa loved to be on the forefront of technology. He had a car with remote start in, I believe, the 70s. It was a Buick.
Really?
Dad remembers this. Wow. He's like, I promise you, he had a car that had remote start. It was way back then. I mean, it's...
Wow. So he was rich.
No. He was a hustler. And he always cared about his automobile. So that was... And cars weren't expensive back in the day. This is a total sidebar, but he had a famous country music singer's car. That he had wrecked. I think it was Ricky Skaggs. I'm gonna ask my dad and get this straightened out. But the guy had wrecked it in Indiana, and it got rebuilt around here.
Yeah.
And my grandfather ended up with it. Dad remembers it. He said it had bull horns on the front.
Really?
And he remembers it had dual quads. He swears that he thinks it had a Hemi, but I think it was a Granville or something. It was not a Chrysler car. So I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I don't know if they were right about
it had
that
a good
or what.
Motor in
There's
it,
a picture.
Way, sure.
There's a picture of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yo, he said it was insane.
Probably a boat.
It was. He said it was. He said it was not fast, but you could be doing 60 and stand in it, and it would not stop accelerating.
Yeah, and it's all steel, so it doesn't matter what you hit.
Oh yeah. This is another random story about my grandfather. He bought a Beetle, that was my dad's first car, Volkswagen Bug, and Dad said when he got this car, it had a tachometer on it. And it was some kind of done-up model. People swore up and down it had some kind of Porsche genetic. You see, Dad said that no other Beetle could run with him.
Really?
Yes. And that was my grandpa. He was huge into... He wanted the fastest and the coolest. And
the
he
best.
was a car guy.
Yeah.
And that would make sense. coming from going into World War II and riding motorcycles. Yeah. What are you going to do when you get home to get a thrill?
Right.
Yeah. You're not going to get that ever again.
It's crazy. I actually just listened to one of my favorite podcasts, just did an episode about the Hell's Angels.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that, which I had already, I'm a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan. I've read his book on the Hell's Angels he wrote him for 2 years. He wrote probably the most extensively about him. But in this podcast, he did the origins of motorcycle clubs in general. And after World War II, they had all these excess motorcycles. And they no longer needed them. They sold them for dirt cheap. But they gave veterans first dibs, essentially. They offered them, before they put them on the open market, they sent out like letters to all the veterans like, hey, do you want one of these? And that's kind of how Motorcycles Club started. That's how being a biker started.
Was
a World War II.
Camaraderie of being a unit and having your brothers.
And that was the thing, is a lot of these guys didn't feel, they felt lost in the world. They come from war, and no one understands what they went through except these guys that were at war with them. So they got the camaraderie, like you're saying, through riding bikes with each other. I thought that was kind of cool.
It was the healthiest way they could find with coping with PTSD.
PTSD.
PTSD was a lot different back then than it is today.
Yeah,
they didn't even acknowledge PTSD.
Well, they acknowledge it by calling you shell shocked. Yes. And now you're broken. And we don't need you no more.
Well, there was different levels. You were shell shocked if you were irreversibly messed up in your brain, which we would call a TBI. Traumatic brain injury at the moment. We were just expected to deal with life's harsh realities back then, and I think we've lost some of that. I think it should have been more acknowledged back then, but a little less acknowledged now. Now, everybody wants to be a victim, and everybody gets to be a victim.
Yeah, the victim mentality.
And nobody wants to live with life's harsh realities.
But we all do. We all have to.
We do.
I can
vouch that around this table is a mass of trauma that I don't know if it can be paralleled. Maybe that's why we're here, guys.
We've got some stories.
Yeah. It's possible. And everybody sees it. And I understand that wartime is a hell of a time. I know a lot of war veterans, and I've heard a lot of the stories. I know them personally enough to hear the very personal stories, not the surface layer stuff that they give to whoever wants to talk to them. And I know the dark side of it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go back changed. You always are. Yeah. And some of those people are going to come back changed for the worse, and it's never going to get good enough. But just because you're changed doesn't mean you're an evil human being or you're broken inside and irreversible.
Yeah.
Quit being such a victim and try to be some more proactive in it. Does that mean it's going to get fixed? No. Does that mean you need to get fixed? No. Yeah. Sometimes you just need to learn how to cope with what's broken and work around it. Yeah. It's called a scar.
And
then it becomes the person with the scar tissue that's grown over, and it's going to alter you a little bit, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That's one of the things I think the world has kind of lost is realizing that the world doesn't owe them anything. The world doesn't, and you have to take ownership.
Yeah.
Your behavior, even if you have a mental health issue, I've had mental health issues, I've been diagnosed, even if you have a diagnosis, that doesn't give you free rein to treat people badly. You still have to own your actions. You have to own what you do. And that's something that I think is kind of lost. If I could give one book to the youth of America today and say, you have to read this book, it's Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. It is the basis of Logos therapy, and that is literally what it is about. It's about how to have a meaningful life in the face of a world that doesn't care about you. This is a man who was 23 when the Nazis took over Germany. He is Jewish. He had just gotten engaged. Just gotten married. His wife was pregnant. Mm. Him, his mother, and his wife went to Auschwitz. He they called them all up in a row one day after a couple weeks in Auschwitz.
Yep.
And he very protectively got in between his pregnant wife and his mother, put his arms around them, and they went every other person and took those to the gas chamber. Both his pregnant wife and his mother were taken at the same time.
Yeah, this is chapter one of this book.
Yeah, and this is a person that went through this and still found a way to make a meaningful life and made sure that their lives were also meaningful, that their deaths weren't purposeless. And it's beautiful, but that's what it's about, is about ownership. Owning your own pain. Owning your own behavior. And it's a beautiful book. That doesn't mean don't be compassionate. It doesn't mean don't be compassionate. It doesn't mean don't have a heart. It means behave yourself. Because you know how.
Control your emotions.
Yeah.
The problem with modern day psychology and sociology is they've created so much and delved so deep into every nuance that literally there is no one in the world, if they sit down with a psychiatrist, that couldn't be diagnosed with one problem or another.
Yeah, we've been over-diagnosed and over-medicated.
There are people, and I've known a good many of them.
Diagnosed and over-medicated.
Yeah,
definitely over-medicated. And the problem with diagnosis is the over-diagnosis is fine, but the problem is people want to use that as an excuse to do bad things instead of a knowledge on how to control the bad things that you do.
Exactly.
That's what it should be. Oh, I react like this because I got this that's happened to me. Yeah. Well, then I should realize that, and when that happens, when I react like that, I should take a step back, take a deep breath, and realize why that's happening, and then try to go on and do it at that level.
Some people don't have that. It's like they've made so many excuses for them, and they've tried to. And I'm not heartless either, but they've tried to bring in so many different people to champion for the people with mental illnesses.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're right. Most of them, you have a conscious decision of what you're doing.
The world doesn't know.
You cannot.
That's the world's not in debt. You told me. I don't know.
They don't care.
The world itself, the place we're standing on, cares less.
Yeah.
If every human being was wiped out in slow torture in the next 48 hours, 100 years from now, the world would spin around the sun with no knowledge or care that we were here or not.
Yeah.
We only owe each other, and at that, we only owe ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and this ties right back into what we're talking about here. And we're talking about these holidays and the long traditions and stuff that have come up. And then we've all touched on how it's become very commercialized. It's very much not only what I can give, but what I can get.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that with a generation of people coming up that have been told, what can you get, not what can you give? And that's been a big problem that I've been noticing for a long time working with the youth that I've worked with. What can I get? What can I get?
Yeah.
And it's they until they're late into their adulthood, they never ask, what can I give? What can I make? What can I build?
So I think the takeaway from this is, with the holidays, make sure your kids know why you're getting this. And don't make it about the gifts. Don't get them the big gift they asked for.
Yeah.
Because the chances are they don't need it. Right. Give them love and time with their family.
Give them an experience.
Give them experience. There we go. Take them on a walk.
Here's the big thing. We've lost our community.
Yeah.
Bring more of that back into what you're doing. That was the whole point of all these religions. Every single one of them that we've talked about that have conglomerated over the years to become modern day Christianity, especially modern day Christmas time.
Yeah.
Was all about community and coming together. Yep. Love for one another and appreciating what you have and giving what you can.
Yeah.
We have lost all of that in modern commercialization. Try to bring that back. I don't care what religion you call yourself. We're a family. We all know each other. I know I haven't known you real well, but I've known you for 20 plus years.
Yeah, we've known each other forever.
This is my best friend of 25. I've known Brian. He's been an extremely good friend for about the same amount of time, maybe a couple of years longer. Yeah. I've known you for 20 plus years. We're it doesn't have to be blood relation to be a family. And it wasn't in the old time in these religions. It was a community that came together.
Yeah.
Start bringing the community back together.
Whenever we were talking about, you were talking about having a big bonfire with your family. Yeah. I was literally sitting here thinking, well, I wish I could find enough people to go out and have a bonfire with me in December.
Yeah.
Or January. Because I feel like there's not people that would do that. I am down. I've got a huge fire pit and firewood. Yeah. Let's go.
Fire actually warms you guys if you've never been to one.
Yes. When it's cold outside,
so liquor.
You want a big
liquor and fire. It's all you need. Yeah. Liquor, fire, jokes, combo.
Yeah, and then you're drinking, so if you walk away from
it's
the fire,
a good time. And if you're a parent, it's a good time your kids will remember, and that will be a memory that will stick with them for the rest of their lives.
Yep. And, lovely listeners, bonfires make Jod happy.
They do. Jod loves a good fire.
Jod loves fires.
Thanks, everyone, again, for tuning in. New guest, audience members, things are just changing and growing. We apologize for the delays, but you know what? We're making the best of the delays. We're trying to get good content to bring you guys. I mean, we've got a lot stacked up, so stay tuned. Tune in. We've gotten some good rapport going on the Facebook group. I really appreciate that. The Viking posted some stuff, and it's been fun.
Yes.
By the way, no one has figured out what my five countries have in common. Just throwing it out there, guys.
Awesome.
Throw away kids, stay curious, and keep on dumpster diving.